If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Atlantic Coast Mortgage, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 643-114.
Ah, yes, this land was made for you and me. That's Woody Guthrie and the iconic This Land Is Your Land. And with us is Nora Guthrie, president of the Woody Guthrie Foundation, president of Woody Guthrie Publications, and founder of Woody Guthrie Archive. Nora, thank you for coming on this evening.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing good.
Great.
So, this is one of the greatest tunes ever written. I just thought I'd throw that out there. just to give you an indication. Yeah, this is one of the greatest songs ever written for a lot of reasons.
Bye.
But yeah, thanks for being with us. Nora, nice to talk to you.
You're welcome.
I wasn't planning on this, but I went to YouTube to play that song by your dad, and he's got a guitar in his hand, obviously, but on the guitar is it's not a bumper sticker. It's a sign that says, I think it says, "This machine kills fascists." Am I correct?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
How about that? What year was that?
He put that on his guitar during World War II. When he worked, he was on the Liberty ships and the Merchant Marines during the war.
Yeah.
And he had his guitar with him. And he believed that the guitar could be just as potent a weapon at the time as a bomb or a rifle or, you know, it was his weapon of choice, so to speak.
Yeah. Well, he used it very well, I must say.
Yeah.
Has the movie about Bob Dylan, has that had any effect on your foundation or interest from outside about Woody Guthrie?
There's always a lot of calls. Did you see it? Did you see that?
Did you see it? Yes, oh, I thought you were asking me. Yeah, I saw it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, you know, for me, it brings back a lot of memories because I was there and lived through the times that he's talking about. As a matter of fact, Bob first came to our house when he first came to New York looking for my father. It was 1961.
Wow. Yeah.
And he was 19 years old. And I remember it because you'll enjoy this story because I was watching American Bandstand at the time.
Which is such a typically Woody Guthrie program, of course.
Yeah. No, we were watching American Bandstand doing the stroll. It was 1961.
Wow.
And I remember when he came over, I was 11 years old at the time. And he was kind of a funky folk singer looking for other funky folk singers like my dad.
Yeah.
And I was like, I was so disinterested because he was interrupting American Bandstand. I said, "Oh, my dad's not here." And I slammed the door and went back and watched television and learning how to do the stroll and the Watusi, et cetera. And
yes.
Luckily, he banged on the door again, and he was finally let into the house, and that's how we met him.
That is a fantastic story. Not often.
Isn't that funny?
You said you were 11?
Yeah.
And slammed the door on Bob Dylan. Of course.
I did, yes.
Of course it was, you know, Bob Dylan was just the Robert Zimmerman Dylan. He wasn't, you know, the commercial success that Bob Dylan became.
Yeah, he was just starting out. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he was just starting out. Like I said, he was 19. He had just come to New York and was kind of looking around, meeting people. He was only there for like a couple of months or something and decided that he wanted to find my father.
Yeah.
And not only that, but after that, the family became closer with him. And he was wonderful. He used to go out to the hospital where my father was. My father had Huntington's disease for about 15 years. He was hospitalized. And Bob would go out there. He would call my mother and say, "Does Woody need anything?" And he would go out to the hospital and bring extra papers and pencils, cigarettes, things like that. So he was really a bit of an angel to my dad in those early years. Yeah.
That's good to know. You know, when movies do biopics or anything that has a has some connection with the reality, it's they always say based on, and sometimes there's a disclaimer that says some of the characters you see are accommodations of a variety of characters, and some of these scenes were recreated for the purpose of the movie's impact or something. And they have Bob Dylan visiting your father and Pete Seeger at one of the earliest things he did, according to the movie, which obviously now hearing you is not true. I mean, he did go see Woody Guthrie, and he did appreciate and admire, to say the least, your dad's work.
Yeah.
But it didn't quite happen that way, is what I'm getting at.
Yeah, as we know, it's a movie. It's not a documentary.
Right.
It's a movie. But I know, and Bob talks about it, that one of the lovely things that he used to do with my father is he would go out there and play my father's songs.
Yes.
Whereas other people would say, hey, you want to hear my song? And my father would say, no, I want to hear my song. And what it meant to me, it was very moving, because my father wanted to be remembered, his music, you know? So it was really important that this young guy was coming along who appreciated his songs. And as Bob Dylan called himself, a Woody Guthrie jukebox.
Yeah.
And he said I could play him any song he wanted, and I knew it. So you know how comforting that is to someone who's in the hospital who doesn't have long to live, you know? I just think it was such a beautiful gift, you know, that he gave to my dad.
Yeah, and it is a beautiful gift. It's a fantastic story, and one that I've never heard before. And I'm glad you're on the air tonight.
You heard it here first.
Yeah, I'm glad you're on the air tonight telling it, because that's it increases everybody's humanity level. Let's just put it that way.
Totally.
To hear that's an actual that's a real thing. So. You're the president of the Woody Guthrie Foundation, president of Woody Guthrie Publications, and Woody Guthrie Archive. So the Woody Guthrie Publications, are we talking about sheet music, or am I totally off, or what is that?
Yeah, the publications is kind of the business side of it, the copyrights and publications and releases. You know, if someone does a new song or something like that. But we're very involved also in producing a lot of new material. As a matter of fact, come on, call out Chicago, you know, Wilco.
Yeah, sure.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so the one of the earliest projects I did, Woody Guthrie project, was with Wilco. And I've been close to them ever since, for the last 25 years.
Now, wait a minute. Give me all the information. A Woody Guthrie project with Wilco. What is that? How did that come about?
Well, in the archives, when I started the archives, I went through all of my father's papers and lyrics. And believe it or not, there were like 3,000 lyrics that I came across.
Wow.
Yeah. And most of them, no one had ever known, because my father got sick so early in his life that he never had an opportunity to record most of his songs. So I reached out at a certain point to Wilco and asked if they would be interested in writing some music to some of these unknown, unpublished lyrics. And they did with Billy Bragg. And we did a couple of albums called Mermaid Avenue. I don't know if you've heard of Mermaid Avenue.
Indeed, I have. Yeah,
well, that's ours.
Come to think of it, I just assumed that when somebody like Woody Guthrie wrote a song, he wrote the lyrics and the music. But how many did your father normally just write the words and obtain the melody from some other source?
Well, Yeah.
Really?
Sometimes and he didn't write music. The musical side wasn't the important side to him.
Right.
What
I get
called,
it.
He said the music.
Yeah.
The music is the words, and the music is the people. That was his focus.
Oh yeah.
So it was really like lyrics that he might scribble, like to the tune of or something like that. But again, he didn't record because he was ill. So a lot of times these lyrics were just, he might have had a melody in mind, but we don't know. So they were lost. And I was able to get together with Wilco probably like 25 years ago.
Yeah,
we started working together. And we did the Mermaid Avenue album, which was a Grammy nominee and has a lot of success and a lot of songs that have come out of that, like California Stars.
Yes,
one of Wilco's big hits.
Yeah.
So that's Woody's. That's Woody's lyric.
Amazing.
And we all went to Dublin together to record that.
Why Dublin? He said. Just out of curiosity.
Billy Bragg is in England, and they wanted to find like a common ground that wouldn't be something between Chicago and London. Yeah.
God.
So it's funny. I've produced. That's what the publications company does, basically. I take a lot of these lyrics, and I did a lot of tunes with Dropkick Murphys. Do you know them?
I sure do. Absolutely.
Yeah, so I did Shipping Up to Boston.
That I don't know, but I sure know Dropkick Murphys.
That's kind of their big, that's their big song right now, and that's a Woody lyric. But I did two albums with Dropkick Murphys. And so that's what I've been doing for the last 30 years, is trying to get through some of these lyrics.
Well, that is just an incredible story for me to wrap my head around, that bands like Wilco, Dropkick Murphys, are putting music to Woody Guthrie lyrics. That's just mind-boggling.
Well,
That's so cool.
I've worked with a lot of different groups, and I've done stuff with Lou Reed, and just like everybody I've worked with.
How did you get into it? I mean, is it just part of it because you grew up with it, or what attracted you to this?
I got into it because there was a book published about 40 years ago. It was called Pastures of Plenty, and it was a collection of some of my father's writings and things like that, and in it, there was a lyric that they had published, and a songwriter from Austin, Texas, I believe he's from, Slade Cleaves, set it to music. And at this time, I had just started working with my father's material about 40 years ago, and he sent a tape, and he had set one of my father's lyrics to music, and I loved it. And I remember going around to like Pete Seeger and some other people who are the quote-unquote experts on my father's stuff. Well, what do I know? I'm just a kid. And I said, have you ever heard this lyric before? And he'd go, no. And all the folk singers that I asked had never heard any of these lyrics before. And I thought it was just a beautiful thing. So I said, let's do more like that. And so that's kind of what got me started. And I just found that the lyrics were so diverse in their topics. It was everything from how to raise a kid to how to raise hell.
And how to raise a kid. There you go. There's your title for something. From how to raise a kid to how to raise hell. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's kind of been my focus. And then the other focus was we created the Woody Guthrie Museum and Center in Tulsa, Oklahoma, which now lives next to the Bob Dylan Center in Tulsa, Oklahoma. They're side by side, and there are two large museums and archives there. And we kind of built that with people from Oklahoma.
Right.
And we've done a lot of stuff along the way.
Okay, this land is your land.
Yeah.
Obviously, your father, it was a huge, huge, meaningful song. I'm not going to use the word hit, because that's demeans it. I think it's an anthem, a calling, if you will. Did he write the music to that?
The melody is pretty much taken from an old Carter Family tune.
No kidding.
Yeah,
I did not know that.
He was a big fan of Carter Family.
Oh yeah, I know of the Carter Family, but I never put two and two together. In fact, you know, until this conversation,
he liked the Carter family a lot, and he would swipe some of the melodies from them in the early days when he first started writing his songs. But that's a funny story how he wrote This Land.
Let's hear it.
It was 1940. Yeah, he was 1940, and he was traveling from California to New York, thus the title, From California to the New York Island. Yeah. So it's really based on a road trip that he took. And he arrived in New York, and he didn't have any money, and he stayed at a little flop house on 43rd Street and 6th Avenue, like a real bum hotel, right?
Yeah.
And he's looking out the window. He's never seen a big city like New York before. And he sits down at the desk, and he starts writing lyric after lyric after lyric his first 2 weeks in New York. So when I looked at his notebooks, and you look at the first version of This Land Is Your Land, it's really like a travelogue, because he had just traveled from California to the New York Island.
Yes.
And he basically describes everything he sees along the way. That's what all the verses are.
Wow.
And but when you look at his journal the day before, he also wrote a song. And that song was about women's hats and all the hats that he saw in New York. And the song the day after,
yeah,
he wrote this song called Jesus Christ. And it's a very popular folk song. And he wrote it when he was looking out of this flop house window, and he saw a bum walking down the street. And he had a long beard and a kind of shabby looking coat on, yeah, you know, kind of a bum walking down the street.
Right.
And he said, he looks like what I was told Jesus Christ looked like.
Yeah.
So he wrote that song, and when you look at the song, so that first week in New York, it goes everything from women's hats to Jesus Christ to how to build better roads, because he had just traveled across the country on some bad roads.
Yeah.
And This Land Is Your Land stuck in the middle of it all. And it wasn't really until the 1950s when Pete Seeger started singing it that the song really became well-known.
Boy. You ought to have a podcast or something, or a regular dissemination of this kind of information, because I personally find it unbelievably fascinating and concepts.
It's a fun story, right? And it's like a very human story.
Yeah.
You know, because I never knew all the years growing up. I mean, I would ask anybody, like Pete Seeger, so where did he write This Land Is Your Land? Nobody knew.
Right.
And then I looked at the paper, and at the bottom of the lyric, it says, written at Hanover House, West 43rd Street and 6th Avenue. That's right in the middle of Bryant Park. That is Midtown Manhattan.
Wow.
Like, he didn't write it in Oklahoma. He didn't write it in the Dust Bowl. He didn't write it in L.A.
Yeah,
he wrote it in friggin' New York.
Wow. I'm afraid that we are out of time, but I hope we get to talk again. Nora, it has been absolutely, I can't tell you how great it's been to have you on the air.
Well, I'm looking forward to it, and I'm actually coming out to Chicago with my granddaughters in a couple of weeks. So, hi, everybody. I'll see you soon.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for being with us.
Okay,
have a great night. Bye-bye. That's Nora Guthrie, president of the Woody Guthrie Foundation, president of the Woody Guthrie Publications, and founder of the Woody Guthrie Archive.